life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.
Thanks for listening.
Brain.
I'm Brian Smith, the
dynamite
man who dreams of Pat Sharp's cats.
Dynamite,
and this is episode 27 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. As always, I am joined by my co-host, taking some time out from being rightfully belittled by Tom Sharpling on Twitter, it's Anthony Askew.
Hey, everybody.
And we are joined this week by a guest who was determined to be employee of the quarter. Do you think you've done good work in these past 3 months? Well, think again. You didn't do as well as this man. He's better than you, and he has the award to prove it. It's Leon Everett.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I don't know whether we can top that, to be honest.
To be fair, you can't.
No.
Well, it's because I had an entire week to write it since cancelled last week. And we're here tonight to talk about the Castle of Cagliostro, the 1979, I want to say.
It is.
Lupin the Third film. But beforehand, let's have a quick chat and preamble. Leon, you went to a Zelda concert last
week. I did. This Tuesday, it was for the 25th anniversary of Zelda. They had a symphony orchestra. It was the Royal Philharmonic. And it was very good. It happened at the Hammersmith Apollo, which is an all right venue, but it was really good, really, really good. If you're a fan of the Zelda series, it basically just did everything you wanted. Didn't play, obviously, every single track that everyone would have loved, but I think they had a good selection. And from what I heard, it was... not many people complained about what was played, but in my own experience, very, very good, and it's quite moving at times.
I've got a question for you, actually, regarding that. Who is... I've seen someone post a picture of her and Zelda Williams. Who is
Holly?
She in relation to the to Zelda? Except
well, what happens... they had her hosting, aka just announcing what tracks were going to be played.
Right.
But the reason, it was Zelda Williams, by the way. The reason why Nintendo had her over is because when Zelda Ocarina of Time was released on the 3DS a couple months ago, or earlier in the year, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
In the ad campaign, which was mostly in America, but I think some of the adverts came over here as well. They, because Robin Williams is meant to be a really big Zelda fan, they had him in the adverts, and apparently he named his daughter after her, after the princess. So they had those two in the adverts, sort of just talking about stuff and just, you know, general advert stuff. And because of that, that's where the relation came, and that's why she was there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
And you doing that highbrow thing, I was, not this weekend, but the previous weekend, I was, went to Broxbourne and Nottingham to, see Dragon Gate, the Japanese professional wrestling company. They were doing a tour of the UK. They did, originally they were only planning to do two dates, but they did a third date in Nottingham, which I didn't go to because it would have suddenly cost, it was suddenly entered into hotel fees as opposed to stayed at my mum's on the Friday night. But that was really great. I've seen them, how many times before? Twice before. They've been over twice. So I saw them in 2009, 2010. And, this time I decided, because supposedly they're not doing anything next year, I think, oh, I'll go and see both dates this time, which I was pleased did because, I would have normally just picked the Broxbourne date because it's being closest, but the Nottingham one was a much better show. The Broxbourne one was good, but the Nottingham one was great.
Did they do a different thing day to day, or was it the same?
Yeah, they had a sort of storyline. They did a storyline which supposedly, if you lost five fights in a row as part of this Dragon Gate UK promotion, you wouldn't be allowed to come back to the UK.
Deported.
And so they've got the most popular wrestler is a guy called Seema, who's currently a heel, a bad guy, but he's still clearly the most popular because he's like got the most charisma. But everyone's sort of happy to play along with him being the bad guy and boo him consistently, and him telling us how bad the UK sucks. But yeah, he was zero and three coming into the first show, and then he lost the match at the first show. And so he had to team up with a guy he used to team with, who he'd turned on earlier in the year in Japan, for one night to try and save his Dragon Gate UK career in Nottingham, which of course he did.
Yes, I was worried there.
But yeah, the thing is, they said they won't do anything next year. I don't know whether they not told the Japanese wrestlers that or something had changed, because they were constantly telling everybody, see you next year. Sort of at the show, before the show, if you saw them after the show, they'd be saying that to you.
Did you get a chance to meet any of the wrestlers afterwards or anything?
Not so much this time. I did go to a meet and greet last time, where I was wearing a Star of the Giants t-shirt, one of the Uniqlo Shonen Sunday ones they did a few years back. And so it's like all the wrestlers of a certain age, we go, like, oh, Star of the Giants, pointing at my t-shirt. But yeah, I only went to, they did like a press conference thing in Nottingham, which I went to instead. And there was a bit of a meet and greet then, but I was hungry, so I nipped out for the last 20 minutes and got some food instead, rather than having to queue and pay £5 for an autograph.
Autographs are great, though. I'm a sucker for autographs.
Well, so. I've got most of the guy's autographs already, you see, from last time. That was the other thing.
All right. Oh, you don't want a dupe. You don't want a duplicate. Nah.
But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'll highly recommend it if and when they come back again, which I'm sure they are.
But maybe not next year.
Well, I don't know where, because it's organised by a company called A Merchandise, who are like a wrestling shop. And they organised a Pro Wrestling Noah thing earlier in the year at Broxbourne and Wolverhampton. I only went to the Broxbourne one, which was pretty good as well. And they've been organising these Dragon Gate ones the past few years, which have all been great. But they said they had other plans for 2012, which meant they weren't going to be able to put any live shows. So I don't know whether somebody else is putting them on or whether those plans have changed or what, but I'm sure they'll announce something around... when did they announce it? Probably around May last time, I think, was when they last announced it. So I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, sounds fun.
And, Leon, you hung around MCM Expo without going in.
it's the thing to do. Just to hover about the expo.
Street attend. Corner.
Yeah, no. The corner of the bar in the Fox Bar. I was around this weekend. It's now a 3-day event. It's been like that for about a year and a half, I think, and it's quite weird because it's basically now been turned into a con, but without any sort of events, really. I was around mostly for social reasons, but to meet up with friends who've come down or from wherever to be there for the weekend. But I also sort of hovered about, and obviously a lot of friends of ours help and take part. It was pretty good. It seems that Expo, MCM Expo, is the event where people just unleash their, like, most expensive and most time-consuming cosplays, despite the fact that they have to deal with, like, London traffic or underground. a lot of the stuff they saw this weekend was just amazing. Really amazing.
I've seen some pictures on Facebook and I was pretty impressed. So I don't know what went on in the expo, but neither do you, unfortunately.
There was lots of events. I'm looking at their program now. They got loads of video game stuff. What's going through here? What they got like?
Yeah, they had Street Fighter X Tekken, which I would have jumped to the chance to play. I probably would have paid the entrance fee just to have a blast, but.
Marvel all over again.
Marvel all over again, yeah. And probably got
£10 just to play that game.
Oh, they had Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom 3 as well.
Oh, Jesus, I would have killed two birds with one stone. Damn.
So yes, what else they got here? Obviously the cosplay events, as they normally do.
Well, yeah, talking about the cosplay events, they have this sort of contest called Euro Cosplay, which is represented at a few of the other cons during the year. And what happens in the earlier part of the year at the cons and the May Expo, they sort of have people being contestants and getting through certain rounds, and they're sort of judged by a round of experts, possibly. And then at this expo, the October one, is where they get...
Pit them together in a fighting thing.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. They push them together. So people who are in sort of big, massive dresses end up losing and dying, and then the people in, like, the Warhammer... suits end up stomping on everyone. But the news is, this year, a Brit one. Neil Lockwood, who goes by the name of Zariel, he won for his Skeksis from Dark Crystal. Very, very good costume. Very, very good.
I've seen the pics. It's certainly something. To think that someone made it that's not, like, getting paid a load of money to make it for a film or something, it's pretty impressive.
Operational eyes, everything is... very impressive.
I reckon I'll probably win it next year for my Q cosplay.
Should have done your Green Man.
That was pretty picture perfect. Yeah, I'll just pretend I sold everything from myself. But I've seen some of the cosplayers. Bloody hell, though, some of them were good.
Yeah, because there was actually, there's a, apparently a guy in a Gundam suit where he had to be, like, harnessed in, and he could walk about in it. And there's also people doing Warhammer 40k ones, where they also, sort of a similar thing, you sort of get into it, get strapped in, and then they can walk about, and they looked really, really good.
Apart from, like, the kind of, the pride of saying, oh, you won Euro Cosplay 2011 or whatever, is there, like, a prize or anything?
I think there is a prize. I think it's a trip to Japan or something. Citation needed. It's something.
Let's pretend it is for now. That's a pretty good prize.
No, the irony is that you may have been able to take that trip to Japan anyway if you hadn't spent all the money making your costume.
Yeah, apparently that Skeksis costume costs north of a grand.
It's pretty good, but a grand. I can see where the money went, but Jesus Christ. But whatever you're into.
The thing it seems of it, because I had, like, interviews playing, because they have, like, a massive sort of TV sort of thing showing trailers and stuff outside. Yeah, and they're playing interviews and stuff, and it seems like the guy just enjoys building these things. Yeah. It's, like, a really expensive hobby.
Yeah, I suppose there's worse hobbies to do, like smoking and drinking. Maybe not so much a hobby, but it's
Would you enter Euro drinking competition?
Well, I wouldn't need to because I'd be on the expert judging panel. Oh, and when these guys were doing this, I was at an anime society in Newcastle listening to a talk about living in Japan, which was actually really interesting. And that was... I might as well say his name, he might like it. And that was done by Henry Prestige. Hmm. And it was really good, actually. I was going in, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be some gobshite standing up... because I'd never met the guy before. And it was actually really good. It was really interesting. And he kept the crowd for a good couple of hours, so... good stuff, hats off. That's what all I've done in the past 2 weeks, really.
See, I've been going to highbrow concerts and mingling with friends, and Brack's been out adventuring, following...
Yeah, but you're employee of the quarter. Brack's got a job, which is... so, see if you can work out what...
You've got free time to fill up.
I do, but it's money. Everything costs money.
Down the library. Hang out at the library.
Yeah.
True.
Absorb some culture, you know.
I can absorb culture in my own home.
Right, talking about culture, Joe, let's talk about the culture you have absorbed this week. The Castle of Cagliostro. Yes, it's the second Lupin the Third film, and probably the one most people have likely to have seen. It's, I think it's the only one you can buy in the UK at the moment, for a start.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more... If you see a Lupin to someone, they'll say, oh, I know who he is, and they'll just be referring to Castle of Cagliostro, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
But well, to be fair, they wouldn't know. They'd be like, Lupin? Oh, you mean Lupin? And be like, oh, no.
Or Wolf.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Wolf.
Now, I've not heard the newest dub. I think I've only heard the Streamline one.
Yeah, I've only heard the Streamline as well.
I've heard only the Japanese dub.
Ah, I've heard the English. So I've not heard the one with David Hayter.
No.
As Lupin.
See, I really hope he's doing the Solid Snake voice.
See, I was about to say, I love David Hayter because of that, but I don't think he can be Lupin.
It'd be hilarious.
So, I don't know. But yeah, 1979. Jesus Christ. I was reading as well, it took 4 months. It only had 4 months production time. That is just mind-boggling.
It's weird because today I've got like the DVD, which apparently is the Streamline dub, but I watched the Japanese. And I was watching, there's some intro by Jonathan Clements, you know, Jonathan Clements. Yeah, and like I'd read that it was 4 months, and then he says it was 7 months. It's like conflicting information.
Someone's telling lies, and I reckon Clements is.
Yeah.
Because we get our facts right here.
Well, have I mentioned the Crusher Joe inaccuracy in the encyclopedia that he co-wrote?
No.
About the claim that it's named after the Crush Gals wrestling team. When that is not possible because Crusher Joe was published long before the Crush Girls wrestling team was formed.
We're going to start a war here.
Loose lips sink ships.
Well, I was just kind of assumed it was a deliberate mistake in order to make sure people stealing the information. Because that's what we... When I was at Videolog and TSI, we used to put deliberate mistakes in our databases to spot people who'd stolen them.
Ah. Entrapment, eh? That's a sneaky idea, but it works.
It's not novel. I think most people who do encyclopedias and things will put a mistake in to catch people who just cribbed the information they've used. So
what is this?
Yeah.
Basically, Lupin, grandson of the gentleman thief, Arsène Lupin, and his mate, Jigen, who's like in any of the like incarnations of Lupin, any of the films, do you see him without his hat on properly? Do you see like his face properly?
I think there's a few episodes in series one where his hat's taken off. But in general, no, he keeps his hat on.
Right. And he looks pretty cool.
I think that's why he stays the most consistently designed across various incarnations, because he's got the hat, he's got the beard, and it's hard to go wrong with a bit in between. As long as you get those two.
But yeah, him and Lupin steal a load of money from a casino in the opening scene, and Lupin realises that it's counterfeit bills. And he remembers a point in time when he heard about these bills, which are referred to as goat bills, and that they came from Cagliostro. And that ends up them trying to kind of... Actually, why do they go to Cagliostro? To get the fake bills or to... Because I don't... Why do they go then? If they know there's fake bills there, why do they go?
For the treasure.
Yes. What? They're unaware of the treasure at this point.
They head off to the rumoured source of the bill. Yeah, I think it's just a MacGuffin to get them involved in. But yeah, it is a bit of a stretch. I mean, there's an episode 10 of the first series, which Miyazaki who I don't think we've mentioned, was the guy directing this film, also directed. And episode 10 is called, I've got it here, Hunt Down the Counterfeiter. And there's elements of that episode in Castle of Cagliostro. In that one, there's a reason why he's hunting it down. I think it's more of a reason than it is here. He's not in competition with somebody trying to hunt him down. But it also it contains a clock tower. It contains people walking up the cogs inside the clock tower. It contains somebody hanging off the hands of the clock face. And counterfeiting, yeah. So there's quite a few elements from that crop up in this.
Sounds like a direct sequel.
There's enough stuff which is completely different, though. It doesn't really seem a sequel or a straight remake. I think there's just elements. Whether they... who wrote this one? Yes, different writer, I think. So I think it's just elements they've included, perhaps because it was like, oh, well, this is counterfeiting. It's got a clock tower in it. We'll put all those... I mean, because a lot of the stuff with the tower and the battlements... riffs on things from Toei's Puss in Boots that Miyazaki had worked on as well, which I've not seen, but I mean, loads of people riff on Cagliostro, so it's like this sort of thing gets passed down from director to director.
Well, yeah, I didn't actually realise that they don't really have a reason until just now. So I don't really know what to say about it, but just overlook that. That's not important.
I don't know whether it's just that he thought, if we find the source, then we can print our own bills up. We won't have to steal.
See, but I can understand that, but just
hold it to ransom.
Oh, see, that makes sense. But to steal the print and press, they throw all the money out, so it seems counterproductive. Why not keep that money that they throw out the car if they want to print more? And they might as well have done.
But, it's not really...
It's not important at all.
Once they actually get to Cagliostro.
And in good fashion, they dress up, sneak into this huge Fort Bayard... kind of place. And then they're in. And they end up coming across a damsel in distress who I suppose it's not really a spoiler because we've already started speaking about it, who turns out to be Clarice. And she's is she a princess? Is she regarded as a princess or just royal blood in regards to like the Cagliostro?
Yeah, because it's the Grand Duchy of Cagliostro.
Right.
Yeah, she's like the heir, but because she's not old enough, there's the count who's acting as the regent.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And who wants to marry her. Yeah. But not for love.
Though his creepy hands, he's got creepy big hands in one scene, when she's asleep.
Yeah.
See, I realise he's got a creepy pencil moustache, but I didn't really take much notice of his hands.
And he does get accused of being a paedophile at various points during the film.
Yeah.
Which I suppose he is, because, I suppose you can assume Clarissa's, how old, like maybe 16?
Yeah.
The wedding is, as she's aged and become old enough to marry, he's marrying her straight away. All for... the treasure and the mystery of Cagliostro, which we'll not get to yet because it's a bit of a spoiler.
Well, I think we can spoil it. It's 1979.
Yeah.
Too soon. And the treasure turns out to be Roman ruins, which, as Lupin comments on, it's too big to put in his pocket, or else he would have stole it. Which I like that line. But it's all the stuff in the middle that's important. Isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yes, trying to think where to begin. I've got some notes here.
Yeah.
So the big thing which people, first thing, big thing people remember is the car chase. Where Clarice is being chased by the henchmen of the Count, and Lupin gets involved and rescues her in his little Fiat 500. have you ever seen the model kits of that Fiat 500 just show up in completely unexpected places, or is it just me?
I've never really took much notice. I suppose I will now, but what's it popped up in?
Just in random model shops where it's not like they're stocking any sort of particularly large amounts of anime-related kits or stuff. I think it has like an interest from people who like collect Fiat kits, possibly, and car kits in general. But yeah, I've seen it in a number of sort of local model shops.
Never been tempted to buy it?
It shows up on eBay a lot as well. I've got a Lupin saved search, and that's one of the things which crops up with reasonable regularity. So I don't know if it's still in print or whether they just made an awful lot of them, so you can still pick them up fairly cheaply. But it'd be one you'd have to paint, you see, that's why.
You've put me off already. I tried painting Warhammer once, and...
Warhammer was what put me off painting models as well.
Damn you, Warhammer.
I was okay with, like, Gundam models, where I know you're supposed to paint them, but I can't be bothered. They come in the right colours, and then get stickers.
Oh, adding little stickers to things like that. Oh, what an awful job.
See, stickers are the reason I never got into any of those things like that. It's just too fiddly. Yeah, it's too fiddly.
But I do have three of the Kubricks of the series. You know, like the little super deformed action figure things. Yeah, I've got a Lupin, I've got a Gomon, and I've got a Count. The Count in his brown suit, not in his more regal attire with the mask.
Is his hands really big in them, or...?
No, they're standard Kubrick-sized hands.
Oh, right, okay. I thought they had a nice little touch. Twice the size.
Like little Playmobil-type hands. Right. I think it's the closest thing you can compare them to. But I think I picked them up for £1 each or something.
That's cheap. I bet you can sell them on eBay for more than that.
I think it was one Iacon when Otaku were like, stop clearing or something.
That's alright.
That action scene, I think, is one of the things people remember. Because it's really good. And I think it gets copied. Not deliberately copied a lot, but a lot of Lupin films open with a car chase.
Yeah, the ones I've seen, definitely. But what better kind of chase than a car chase?
And it ends with them dangling off a cliff, which is one of the things... The thing about it, the film, is it's not very Lupin-y.
Yeah, I've heard this, because I've not... It's one of those things where, when I first watched Castle of Cagliostro, I said to myself, yes, I'm going to find a source where I can get all the old series and marathon them. But it just never happened. And every time I rewatch the film, including this time, I say, yes, I need to get them. But I just never get around to it. But in my research, it seems one of those things where it's people just say that it's not very... Especially Lupin himself. They say that he's not the sort of playboy douchebag that he's meant to be.
Yeah, the thing I guess right is the slapstick. So the stuff like him holding Clarice dangling off the cliff from the grappling hook thing he's got in his belt. That's very Lupin-y. And some of the other slapstick which crops up does come across very Lupin-y. The thing I was going, what is it? I was like looking at loads of character designs. I'm going, why is the character design for him in this seems so un-Lupin-y? And it's the eyebrows.
You took the words out of your mouth. I was Googling Google image and stuff and from other stuff I've seen. Yeah, definitely.
His eyebrows are too sort of opening and welcoming.
Not sleazy and...
Yeah, where
borderline creepy.
Yeah, he's either, well, I don't know if borderline creepy, but yeah, he can be sleazy, he can be sort of cunning. He hasn't got cunning eyebrows in this, at least not very often. So I'm just looking at the first volume of the manga. Yeah, so his eyebrows are always sort of, might be quizzical, might be lusty, But yeah, they're normally sort of diagonally pointing down towards his nose in some form or another. Or at least one eyebrow is, where he might be sort of arching them, questioning. But yeah, but this guy, he's always like a very open face. So, looks fairly positive. You don't really get the idea that he's always thinking some sort of plot behind his eyes in the same way you might do in other things. Yeah, so I think that is a big part of it. And the other big part of it, which is Clarice. Boy, oh boy, is she a big part of why this isn't very Lupin-y. The comparison I made on Twitter when I was watching it is, if you want to see how wrong it is that Clarice is in this film, is imagine a James Bond film or a Golgo 13 story with the same sort of character behaving the same thing. If James Bond had like a 16-year-old girl who had a crush on him in it, it would change the tone of the film entirely and it would be really creepy. I don't know what he would be... Well, Golgo 13 would just be odd, because obviously Golgo would... I don't know. Presumably he's not into underage sex.
You never know.
You never know.
You were Golgo.
But from Bond or Lupin, you'd expect some sort of reaction. And Lupin does have some sort of reaction in this, but it's...
A more sweet reaction.
It is a sweet reaction, but it just doesn't seem very Lupin-y, that she's there in the first place. And I mean, loads of the films after this sort of have... They don't have, like, the underage aspect, but they do have, like, the girl he's helping out, and there's barely any sense of any sexual interest between either of them.
I can't remember whether it was you that mentioned this to me, Brian, or not, but... Because I heard somebody complain about this very thing, and I can't remember whether it was you or someone else that said... It could be because in this, he's meant to be older.
That wasn't me.
Well, unless I've totally dreamt that up myself, I don't know, but apparently...
I have read something similar to that, because you know, obviously, they relate in the film the flashback
yes.
of him meeting her, and I have read somewhere that someone rationalised that as all Lupin stories type thing happened during that era, uh-huh. like this one sort of set later on.
Yeah. See, that's what who was it that mentioned that?
I don't know.
I don't remember speaking about this to anyone but you, Brian. And if you didn't...
No, it wasn't me. Because the problem I have with that theory is that, unfortunately, the character design in this film makes him look younger than all the previous TV episodes.
That's fair enough.
He might have stole youth in the last episode. Sure,
yes, found the youth.
Yeah.
I'm sure there must be an episode or some story where they've had that. Yeah, so that's mainly... I mean, it's still a very good film. And there's a few other glimpses where it does seem very monkey punchy, so to speak. So the slapstick. There's the bit where Zenigata's... examining the water spout, and you see his head distorted through the water. And the actual pose when he's distorted through the water looks more like a Monkey Punch design than a Monkey Punch pose, sort of, because it elongates his neck more than he is everywhere else. But the guy who looks most like a Monkey Punch character is Jodo, the main henchman of the Count.
With the old fella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone's got big hands and big feet. That's the other thing, which does make them still feel like they're Monkey Punch characters. I mean, Lupin the Third has gone through so many character designs. The green versus red special they did.
Was that the colour of his jacket or something?
Green versus red was a special which is very flawed. It needs about 20 more minutes to tell its story, because it's got far too many plots in it. But the opening sequence has a vast amount of Lupins turn up, and then it does like this Usual Suspects type thing, where you get like 30 different Lupins taking their mugshots at the police, which sort of runs through most of the Lupin character designs there has been. including the Cagliostro one. And yeah, so lots of things can be done with Lupin. And that, the story of that film is that all you need to be Lupin is to be smart and cool. That's all you need. Oh, and a jacket and a tie sort of some kind. Mm. But yeah, basically it's about this cook who decides to be Lupin.
That sounds pretty interesting. What's that one called?
Green versus Red. Hmm. But it's super flawed. You'll be like, what? Is it over already? Because there's just like so many storylines. There's like four different storylines going on.
And it just ends.
Yeah, and you'll feel very dissatisfied. Hmm. But I have a very low threshold for liking a Lupin or any particular sort of caper heist type film. So I liked Ocean's 12, so there you go. I'll happily watch any Lupin film.
See, that's very weird because I was recently rewatching the Ocean's trilogy, and I'd seen 11 and 13, but I'd never seen 12, and I found 12 to be a harder watch, though I still quite enjoyed it weirdly. Yeah,
12 is the one where it wasn't originally a script intended for those characters. It was a different film, and then they sort of wrote the characters into it. But yeah, because it's a massive cheat.
Yeah.
It's a massive, massive cheat. And it does some things which are bound to annoy people. But I saw it in the cinema. I don't think I've rewatched it since I saw it in the cinema, but I did enjoy it at the time.
So you're easy pleased with capers and stuff?
I am, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep that in mind when you read my comic script.
Yeah.
I send it to you, so I get good
quote this. You can quote this audio if he doesn't like it.
Yep. Oh, good. I would say a hell of a lot about the script.
Yeah, you'd have to delete your final draft.
Installation file. But yeah, one of the things that I really love about this, it's the whole Lupin and Zenigata kind of relationship that they have in this film. I don't know whether, like, in some of the older films in the series, it kind of plays on the same thing of them kind of working together and they're kind of, the whole Batman Joker thing where one without the other is totally rubbish. Mm. And I just think it's done so well. And I'll tell you what, I love the scene where Lupin dresses up. I was laughing my head off at that. It's just so clever. Now, I love people dressing up as other people and pretend to be them. It's brilliant. Brilliant. But yeah.
See,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of my favourite sort of sequences involving those characters is when Lupin is just sort of flying through the air on fire and just in one sort of type of movement, he's just out of his burning clothes. Put him in the car. It's a beautiful image.
Is that what you wish you could do? Undress men with a flick of your wrist?
Well, the only answer is to say yes, because if I say no, women, it's quite rapey, so yeah.
But that'll keep in the theme with the whole Lupin perversion. Well, I don't suppose Lupin's very rapey as such. I hope.
No, you need to read some of those earlier stories.
Oh, right. Oh, let's have a look at my notes. Let's
see what... The thing I like about this Zenigata is he's pretty smart. He's intelligent. Whereas later on, he becomes more of a bumbling fool in some of the later specials. And he becomes more Clouseau-like. Where he knows something up and then he sort of gets into an argument with the... Is it the UN or...
Interpol.
Interpol, yeah.
But yeah, all the...
So all the different countries.
Country leaders, yeah. Who want to take him off the case because he's onto the counterfeiting scheme. And also he wants to catch Lupin. And the other thing I liked is you get Fujiko, who we haven't talked about yet, and Zenigata teaming up, which isn't something you see very often.
Because obviously I've come from a position where I've never seen any of the series, but I think the movie does does sort of highlight the relationships between the characters. I mean, I don't know if it's honest to the previous series or anything, but there does seem to be a good history between them, and it's like one of those sort of adaptation films you'd get of a live-action thing that is done well, and you'd, like, have little lines between them, like the whole things with, like, Fujiko and Lupin himself, the relationship with Goemon, Ishikawa, and Lupin, and just... I mean, most of those characters seem to sort of play off each other. Obviously, the most apparent one being Lupin and Zenigata.
Yeah,
I will say Fujiko comes across far too nice in this film compared to...
even what other ones I've seen, she's a bit of a B.I.T. So... But yeah, I know what you mean. Everyone seems kind of, it's not even a word, like innocent-sized. Just made so much more innocent and kind of...
Sanitized.
Yeah, I suppose it's... Yeah, more possibly for more like a family audience or something, rather than...
Well, it's weird, because when I go on, like, when I went on Google...
It's so obvious for me, Zaki, I suppose. Go on, sorry.
When I went on Google looking at these characters, people like Fujiko, she's brunette, busty, and looks like a total sort of femme fatale badass. Well, in the film, they sort of highlight that, but it's not giving to you type thing.
No, she's sort of stuck on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I mean, she's doing stuff that you see her doing in other stories, sort of assuming a disguise to get close to somebody whose treasure she wants to steal.
Hmm.
But yeah, there's not much of the femme fatale. She doesn't double cross Lupin, which is something she not always, but more times than not does in other stories.
The closest they get to that is when the bit of the gyrocopter and they're flying out and she's just like, see you later, guys. I'm done with this. Things got a bit too real. See you later. But then obviously she doesn't really pay off on that because she's back at the end.
And you don't get much of her sort of being able to wind Lupin around a little finger, which is... She's basically Lupin's one weakness, which is the thing which annoys Jigen and Goemon so much, is that he knows she's his one weakness, and they know it, but it never stops him from falling for it each time. What other things do I like? We talked about the water spout, but the water animation in general.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's just fantastic. Because it's more about how the light is reflected on the water.
Yeah. I made that exact note as well. It's just a bit where they're sort of going through the sort of, I say sewer system, it's not really a sewer system, but there's a bit where the light does that sort of wavy thing, and it's like, this is gorgeous.
Mm. Really. Soon after that bit, a bit that when I first watched it, my mum and dad were in bed, and I was just, honestly, I was rolling around laughing when Lupin's like kind of defying the laws of physics and swimming up the water, and I was just... I was cheering, I was whooping and hollering, because I just love stuff like that, and it's really funny to see.
That seems to be a theme in the film, because...
he does it again, he kind of...
Lupin does it multiple times, and Zenigata also does it at some point, but in the air.
Yes, yeah. Oh, it looks great.
The other thing which I picked up on, like similar to that, is Lupin's inability to get a light in the film. I think it's three times where he can't find his lighter at one point when he's asked to get Jigen to light his cigarette for him, and then he's trying to, is it a firework or something, he's on the rooftop trying to light,
and he's fumbling around and stuff,
and he doesn't manage it, and then when he falls in the pit he has to get Zenigata to light his cigarette there as well. It's just like, I had
no idea.
Why do
they keep playing on that? Why?
Because there's no payoff to it, but it just Because eventually he lights all those fireworks inside his the robes.
That's the payoff.
That was the payoff, but you don't actually see him light them, though.
No.
Unlike
somebody else did.
I think they had really long fuses, and he did it half an hour ago.
Yeah. Because they all lit at once as well.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that before watching it. It's like, again. Oh, it's obviously... Because it is all sort of very well planned out, because you get, like, the way they get back into the tower is set up earlier on where... It's where Jigen gets stuck. The first time they try to break into the tower, he gets his head stuck out that window. And if you notice, that's how he gets back into the tower at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And the... what else did I pick? Oh, the Count's assassins are really cool. So much so I've seen them being ripped off in later Lupin films. People say, what should we do? Oh, let's just... do something very similar to those assassins.
Ninjas with, like, they're bulletproof as well. Ninjas with those weird claws that are, like, just smash through anything. Which actually brings me to a point. The fight choreography, or the action choreography, it's amazing. It's just...
Yeah.
It's, for lack of a better word, so animated in the sense that... it just seems as if loads of work was put into sort of the fluidity of all the action, so they don't really waste any time. I mean, obviously they had the short production schedule, but it doesn't seem like that hampered them in those senses.
No, not at all. Yeah. 4 months? I can't even tidy my room in a 4 month time period, never mind create this.
Well, it just depends how many... You've got to factor in how... I don't know how many key animators they had working on it.
That is a good point.
That they could split all up the scenes. Because they tend to do them by assigning scene to an animator rather than a character to an animator like they might do on a US animated film.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can pull off miracles if needs be. what else have we got here?
Sure, we've got to mention the rooftop scene after the firework when he's running along the rooftops. That looks fantastic. Running down the tiles and stuff. Love that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the specific thing which is borrowed from Puss in Boots, because I've not seen Puss in Boots. I think it might be available in the US. But I know that gets copied a lot, and I know Masaki Yuasa, who did Mind Game and... a bunch of Shin-Chan films and Kaiba, and says this is one of his favourite films, and you can see a lot of Cagliostro in his Shin-Chan films. If you ever look at any of his sort of highlight reels people have done on YouTube of his animation, his Shin-Chan films, there's lots of running up towers and running across. I mean, he didn't work on the Shin-Chan film we watched, but even then you can see the influence there with the running up the girders.
Yeah. And as we know here, Brian likes to see characters running.
I do,
that
yes.
Shows good animation.
Yeah, another thing which I did read was from Puss in Boots is right at the start when they're running from the casino, the ballet leap they do.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's...
Because the soundtrack goes with it as well.
Apparently that's from Puss in Boots too, that particular... movement, which you see everywhere as well, in the current Naruto opening.
Yeah.
What else have I got written down here? Oh, yeah, you mentioned, like, Lupin Zenigata forming truces, which is something which happens frequently. It's like when there's clearly somebody worse than Lupin, then Zenigata's willing to put things on hold until that guy's caught, and then he'll go back to chasing Lupin. my favourite scene is the bit at the wedding with the mummy Lupin, the fake mummy Lupin, who comes to curse the wedding. Which they borrow, the green and red borrows that imagery as well, with the bandages. Because it ends up with bandaged Lupins fighting at the end of the film.
I don't even know what my favourite scene is in this, because... I think I'm going to have to pick the rooftop scene. Actually, no. Scratch that. Scratch that. Lupin and Zenigata in the dungeon, and they set up this, well, a little trap for the... Because the henchmen come to get them, and he...
That is quite an awesome scene.
It's really funny, and he has, like, kind of two skeletons, and they kind of use them as puppets and they scare these henchmen and fight them off, and it's
very clever. It's a massive cheat, because, not to get anal, but, like, at the beginning of the sequence, they come alive, and it's like, oh, it's not really them, and then they're in their underwear beating them up, and it's like, oh, he's using puppetry. With magic. But it's an amazing scene.
It is good. That's my favourite, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's hardly the most ridiculous thing Lupin does in any Lupin. Like, full body suits, which are a completely different shape to his own body.
Oh, well, I love the bit earlier where you have, where they use, like, the costumes to first get in, and, Jigen is like, he's wearing, like, a fat bodysuit, but it's not even like he takes it off, he just lets out the air, and it goes down to normal. It gets me to this day. And I've seen this film about 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, I saw it back in, I'm trying to think, whenever Manga Video first put it out on VHS was the first time I saw it. I think I'd seen the ones which Western Connection put out, which were The Fuma Conspiracy and The Gold of Babylon. The Gold of Babylon is the one that everybody hates.
And why is that?
Because it's really odd, and the character design is really out there. And I mean, I've not seen it for a long time. I mean, I remember liking it, but I've not seen it for a very long time. And again, I have established already that I have a very low... there's a low bar to get me to like these sort of films.
I've got a question, actually. I don't know whether you see it that much in Cagliostro on this, but what's with Lupin's, like, hairy knuckles?
It's just his hands, just where his hands are drawn.
I know, it's an interesting, like, design choice, though. Cause...
Well, as you get older, I'm sure you'll... you'll find it less weird.
I don't know, it's just... I don't know, I'm just maybe... It's not even picking the fault, it's just something that popped in my head.
So how manly he is, the amount of testosterone going through his body.
He's meant to be older in this day, just as the way how you see it.
True, when I grow up into you guys, maybe I'll understand.
And because Monkey Punch draws people with hairy hands, I'm looking at the first volume of the manga again, and within the very first second page of the first story of the manga has a man with hairy hands in a nightclub, I guess, rather than disco. A bit too early for disco. So there you go. Yeah, it's just the way he draws hands. I love it. I like it. I think it's a good look.
Oh yeah, I just thought it was an interesting choice, like, looking at his character, right, what do we do with this? Oh, give him a beard. No, not a beard. Hairy hands. Give him hairy hands.
I had, like, something to add on the, because obviously I've watched this with the Japanese dub and obviously the streamlined dub. And definitely, this is one of those classic cases where the English language dub of it just totally doesn't really... Butchers is... probably too much, because I've seen dubs which do butcher the original Japanese, but this one sanitizes something we were saying earlier, which it does do to an extent, but it also sort of lobotomizes the movie a little bit. Everyone seems that little bit more unknowledgeable, and it was quite annoying, because the time before today when I watched it was the English one, and I remember watching that thinking... to the extent that I still remember it now, is that it is rarely sanitized and rarely... No one's as smart as they are. Every line is sort of done in a way. Like the bit with the Interpol bit, that the script they use is just rarely...
flat?
Sophomore is a word that I'd hear to describe that. Yeah, flat. Flat and sort of almost...
Stating the obvious.
exposition, but with no flavour to it. It doesn't really make any sense why they decided to change the script in that way.
See, I can't really comment having only seen the Japanese, which I love Lupin's voice.
I
don't know why anyone would could even would why David Hayter thought, ah, no, I'll give Lupin a go. Let's see how
I can tell you a reason. It involves a dollar sign on a piece of paper that he'd used to put money into his bank.
I was going to say, I can do a dollar sign on a piece of paper. It'll get me nowhere. But fair enough. But it's just... the voices just bang on.
Yeah, they are.
Every character...
And the thing is, with the streamlined dub, some of the voices are rarely off, in my opinion. Obviously, I say that I've never watched any of the series, but the first one, straight away, is Jigen. He sounds horrible. Horrible.
Can you do an impression?
Impression.
Yeah, well, for someone who's never heard the English, I thought you might be able to reel one off for me.
No, I don't do impressions for free.
No, he's not a master of the vocal arts like you are with your Yorkshire accent.
Also, Goemon, I don't think is that great either. Because the rest sort of fall into that typical of this era dubbing. And they work in that sense, if you forget there is a Japanese dub out there. They work in the sense of you maybe switching channels like 10 years ago and this being on late night. It sort of works in that sense. But it doesn't work. Those characters in particular, just even with that sort of bias, don't really work at all. And it's... I can see why people would have been annoyed back in the day.
I found a brilliant little comment because I thought, I'll have a look on Rotten Tomatoes because Brian likes to find these like YouTube comments. I thought, you know what, I'm gonna have a go at this. And I went on to Rotten Tomatoes, and everyone's all positive, and there's this one guy, Christopher Null. It's only a quick little paragraph. Allegedly a Japanese animated classic. Castle of Cagliostro gives us the story of one, Lupin the Third, an annoying James Bond wannabe who rescues a princess, follows a counterfeiting plot, and causes all kind of havoc. But here we go. Rather crudely animated and a lot more lifeless than you'd think. And someone commented saying, perhaps Dougal would be up this guy's alley. So, would you say it's crudely animated at all?
No, no, there's a few spots here and there, but I think that's
harsh words
for the time. It's there's no bad reviews on it on Amazon.co.uk. I was just looking to see if Amazon.com's got all those 8 1-star reviews, but I bet they're all people complaining about the DVD release.
I'd agree with Brian. I think the animation in this, apart from obviously a couple of spots here and there, I think it's really, really awesome.
Definitely. I'd find it hard to believe that 4 months, as you say, God knows how many key animators and stuff, but 4 months in 1979 can produce this. It's just pretty impressive, I think.
Well, that's why they went on to do other great stuff. So.
Oh, yeah. True.
Oh, is somebody complaining it's got too many foul words for a family movie?
Oh, God.
Is that on the Japanese dub they're talking about?
No, it's the VHS tape.
Which was streamlined, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I remember reading that the manga dub apparently adds some profanities in and people don't like that. I've not heard it myself.
It's a manga dub. That's what it's got to do.
I would love to think it was just so blue. And it just changes the entire feel of the film. It'd be brilliant. Oh, God.
Yeah, I'd love for Clarice to be talking like Hit Girl. It always ruins, like, a fan sub for me if I'm watching it, and like the content obviously suggests something, and then you read one of the lines, and it's a random swear word, and you're like,
seriously?
Oh, that doesn't annoy me as much as if it you hear an English word being said by somebody as like a borrowed phrase, and it doesn't actually appear in the subtitles. That's the one which drives me. I mean, the other thing, the other really, now this is like a really odd diversion. The end of the film where he's being sort of all trying to not hug Clarice. It's like, do I hug you or no, I'm just going to pat you on your shoulders.
just on the forehead, yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's sweet, that, though. It's
sweet, but it just reminded me of the ongoing plot line in Community this season.
Yeah. Annie and Jeff.
Yes. Yeah, because that's sort of having to deal with the same line of creepiness.
Yeah, true.
That's all I've got on this. Apart, unless you want to hear about the real Count of Cagliostro.
Well, I'll give it to Brian to put in the show notes, but I don't know whether you know about this, but there was a live-action Lupin film in 2006.
I heard about that.
And there's a link here, and it's got screenshots, and it just looks...
Isn't that one French made?
Let's see.
You're talking the Arsène Lupin?
No, no, it's Lupin the Third. The Strange Psychokinetic Strategy, it's called.
Yeah, I think you might have your dates wrong on that.
Oh, right. It doesn't look like 2006.
Yeah, that's
1974. Ah, right. Although it's got manufactured. Yeah, that's probably when the DVD was released. Yeah, I don't know. Have any of you seen it? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, no.
Because it looks very funny.
No, the Lupin stuff I've seen the pilot film. I've seen bits of the first series as fan subs. So it has been released now, officially. I've seen some of the second series as DVDs and I think maybe as fan subs back in the 90s at cons, quite possibly. I've seen all the films apart from Secret of Mammo, the actual film.
Yeah, the first one, yeah.
Yeah, the actual theatrical films I've seen. And then I've seen a whole, I don't want to say most of the specials, but I've seen an awful lot of the specials. I've seen all the stuff Funimation put out. And the other stuff which has come out in the US, and then some of the stuff which has been fan sub since then. And you know, this one, even though it's not very Lupin-y, is still the best film because it's better animated than any of the other ones.
Mm. I was just going to say, you know, your information that you had on the real Count of Cagliostro, was he into any secret societies or anything? Because the wedding scene always cracks me up with the like black Ku Klux Klan and the tall swords.
I think he was one of these fake occultists that wandered around in the 18th century. So he wasn't even a count, he was a guy pretending to be a count. Giuseppe Balsamo, who pretended to be Alessandro di Cagliostro. Let's say here on his Wikipedia, a history of Cagliostro is shrouded in rumour, propaganda and mysticism. And he was arrested because of his possible participation in the affair of the diamond necklace, which was something involving King Louis the 16th of France.
Oh, Louis the 16th?
Yes, and Marie Antoinette. He had a daughter. He didn't have a daughter, but in the Arsène Lupin books, his daughter appears as a character. And sort of a lover slash villain. Which is obviously where it's come back through into Lupin the Third.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was an alchemist, mystic, occultist.
Of which weren't they all?
They were there was apparently many around this time.
Yeah.
I suppose Scientology is a bit of a kind of, you know, Tom Cruise, a modern day fake count.
But yeah, there's loads of popular culture. Yeah, the list of popular culture references is very long, of which Lupin the Third's just one.
And in other Lupin news, the new one should be out soon.
Yeah, in December there's a new TV special. And meanwhile on the internet, there's still people debating whether or not there's a TV series coming. And what possible rumours and circumstantial evidence can convince themselves that there's a TV show coming.
Yeah, I would like a TV show, because I just feel like I could watch Lupin stories until my eyes bled. Because I just like that. I just like Lupin. He doesn't age. You can throw him into any environment and he'll just be Lupin. And that's what you want.
There's a 45th anniversary logo that they've been flashing up on, because there's that video with the Karaoke designs, which is apparently from a pachinko machine. There's another video, which is apparently from a slot machine. And then there's this TV special, which does match the other rumours, which were going around.
So nobody knows if that, like the pachinko stuff, is for a TV show, or if it's from the special, or what? Is that what?
It's not from the special. There's footage of the specials, but it's gone up on YouTube as part of, people have taken a clip from a TV show where they're discussing it, because they've obviously got the new cast coming in. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the Lupin in this film is that we just talked about is Yasuo Yamada, who passed away, and he was replaced by, I terribly can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, anime characters. I feel terrible that I can't remember the guy's name now.
He'll be rolling in his grave.
Well, no, I mentioned the guy is alive. The guy's dead. The guy who's alive is the problem.
He's just going to come and get you. It's not a case of rolling.
Kenichi Kurita. There we go. That's the guy's name. So he's staying on as Lupin. Kiyoshi Kobayashi's staying on as Jigen. But we've got new people as Fujiko, Gomon, and Zenigata. I'm not quite sure. Which is odd that the guy playing Goman's retiring, because he was one of the youngest out of the current cast. Whereas Kiyoshi Kobayashi is the oldest, and Goro Naya is the oldest, but he's had throat cancer, so it's kind of obvious why he's retiring. He's been able to do less and less with each passing special, really. Mm. But yeah, Kiyoshi Kobayashi is 78, and he's staying on.
Bloody hell.
But yeah, the thing which made me feel really old is the new Fujiko. Did either of you watch DigiCarrot?
No.
Okay, right. There was like the young sister character of the cat girl DigiCarrot was called Puchiko, and I think the actress who played her was like 15 or 16 at the time. She's the new Fujiko. So.
Oh, God. Ryan's seen them all come and go.
But yeah,
that was, and die.
It was the point at which Lupin cast members are younger than you are. That's the point at which you begin to feel old. But yeah, those aren't the sort of roles she's playing nowadays. You watched some do rah 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 rah
rah
rah rah rah rah rah. Yeah,
she was Celty in that.
Right.
He's obviously a bit more of a Fujiko type role, but without a head.
I still need to watch the second half of that. It's Anime Society, so it's such a bizarre series so far. I still don't know whether I like it.
Have you watched what's it called? The series that was done by the guys before?
Bacano,
yes. Yeah. Have you watched that?
Oh yeah, I have.
I know, yeah. Brian's a fan. I've seen like two episodes say about four or five, and then I put it to one side and I say, oh, I really need to finish that, but I better start again. And then it's just a horrible cycle.
If you've got problems with D-Ra-Ra-Ra's narrative structure, I think you might have even more problems
I just don't know what to think. I'm six episodes through D-Ra-Ra-Ra, and I'm just sat there not knowing where it's going to take us and not even sure if I care where it's going to take us, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know, I just don't feel invested. Like, I care what's going to happen at all, which is a bit of a shame. Because everybody loves it, but apparently not me, not yet. But we'll see.
Ronnie, I think unless you've got anything else you want to say on Kakeo Stray, we'll wrap it up here.
Nope.
I'll just say that I think it still holds up now. Watching it today, still quite a fun romp. I love the animation, love the characters. People should check it out. Obviously, we spoiled the crap out of it, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Nah, it doesn't. And if you're lucky, I don't know whether it's got a Blu-ray release anywhere, but I was lucky enough to have a 720p version of it. And it looks damn good, actually.
Mm.
So maybe that's why it even looks better for me, obviously, because of being 720p. But does it have a Blu-ray release?
Not in the UK yet, no.
Right.
I mean, Optimum have been putting some stuff onto Blu-ray, haven't they? So it's possible they might get around to that.
I would definitely get it on Blu-ray if it comes out.
Also, I know in my past appearances I've been the dub guy, but Laz is an English dub, but I'd heavily recommend watching the Japanese dub for this.
Yeah. I don't even recommend doing it, I just say just do it.
Yeah, well,
bother with the English.
I have my stance, but definitely just check out the Japanese. It's a lot better. The voices suit and the subtitles seem to be quite faithful to what they're meant to be.
Yeah.
Good, good. Right, anything you want to plug?
Go ahead, Leon, you.
Not currently, but if I am invited back, I will have stuff to plug in the future.
Oh, good.
That's exciting. I'm excited. What about a Twitter, Leon, or you're not?
Twitter, I'm going to be creating another Twitter soon. I'll give that address.
What for?
More public stuff, more creative stuff.
Fair enough.
Leon hides behind being hidden on his
Twitter. And on the other hand, I'm posting pictures of dodgy things and...
Yeah, I live a double life that I expect no one to be able to see through. Yeah.
Writing dreadful tweets to Tom Sharp, like, oh, it's just...
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't a dreadful tweet.
What on earth did you think? Well,
I wanted that kind of reaction from Sharpman.
You've heard the show. Why on earth would you spell dude D-O-O-D and use the word pimp?
Because I know what Sharpman's all about. When I read the tweet, read it in his voice.
You wanted to be yelled at.
I did. I do.
Rightio.
It was a great tweet.
Hats off to Tom, if he's listening, which he's not.
Righto. No, because we're pod trash, as he would refer to us.
As he says, everyone in LA has a podcast, so we're just a statistic, and we're not even in LA, so... I want to plug Twitter. I am AntAskew, AntAskew. I'm going to be on the Fight Bait podcast again. I'm a glutton for punishment. And that'll be live, actually, on Thursday at midnight. Fightbait.com/live.
Is that Whiskey Thursday again?
That's Whiskey Thursday again.
Will it actually involve whiskey this time?
Well,
from the American guys?
I don't know. But I really enjoyed doing that. I don't know. I know Leon listened to a bit of it. And Brian, did you manage to listen to any?
A bit. Me and Sue stayed up and watched the whole thing.
See, that's pretty good. And Brian didn't bother.
He likely had work the next day.
Well, you could have downloaded it since.
I listened to it at work, but I have a huge backlog of podcasts to listen to.
And he hears enough of my voice, so...
Exactly. No, I didn't want to say that, but yeah, that was the other thing I was getting to.
Oh, what about you, Brian? What are you doing?
I've still not put up that post about Armored Police Metal Jack because it's just I'm just sitting staring at what I've written so far, and it was just so depressing that I gave up. So I'll try and get back to that.
Sort it out.
It might be up by the time I get this episode up, though. Hopefully I should get it up before your Thursday night thing you just plugged.
Yeah.
No, so you can find me at awesome_enging on Twitter. You can find the podcast at awesome-enging.com or look us up on iTunes or Facebook. Or just let Jeremy look us up on Google. I think we're the first thing he turns up now for Dynamite in the Brain.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud. I Google myself every day. Well, I Google us every day.
You and Pat Sharp.
Yeah. Oh, I laughed at that.
You want to find out what that's all about? To check it out on my Twitter. To learn of the strange dreams I have of celebrities' non-existent cats. Which then get retweeted by said celebrity. Yeah, I think that's it. Nothing else coming up in my life apart from more episodes of Dynamite in the Brain.
Woo!
So check us out next time when I don't know what we'll be talking about. Something. I've got a huge list of topics.
Yeah, massive list.
Just got to find a time to and rearrange them because of going away for weekends and Christmas coming up.
Yeah.
We do actually have a life, us here in the Dynamite in the Brain studio.
I think we've established tonight that you don't have a life. You did say you don't
know what you were doing. Oh, come on, Brian. Pretend.
Well, I will add that thanks for inviting me again, and I look forward to possible invites in the future.
Well, you know what we're going to be doing next time, Leon.
I do, but I don't want to kill the drama.
Yeah. And also the scheduling, so it might not be next time.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Christ. I'm quite tired out now from doing all that.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite.